Well, greetings once again, dear listeners and truth seekers. Thank you for listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. I'm Bruce G. McCarthy, your host for the next 1 hour, and you are listening to Datum Line. In our previous Datum Line broadcast, entitled Dictatorship of Debt, Part 11, we began pursuing the link between a communist, socialist, Nazi, or fascist political system relevant to the words property and ownership in relation to each of their associated economic theories. However, after we defined those words, communism, socialism, Nazi, and fascist, their differences appeared to be more cosmetic and superficial, since all of them profess to be socialist. Are we so politically astute and precise that we can argue at length on behalf of left-wing socialism versus right-wing socialism? And then can we distinguish between either extreme and middle-of-the-road socialism? I doubt it. Choosing a political philosophy or a political candidate these days is kind of like choosing a class president in high school, and far too many voters are still using the same emotional yardstick they used back in school, which is not an accident, because we're easily made the creatures of habit, and our educational system psychologically conditions young socialists to fit into the world designed for them by the elite global dictatorship. Political economic philosophies are much like varsity and professional sports as well, each with their own set of cheerleaders and screaming fans, but with no meaningful difference between one team and the other. You know, professional sports fans root for a home team, so it's called, composed of players drawn from faraway places, maybe even foreign countries, they being traded like cards in a game of hearts or poker. After defining the words ownership and property in our last message, I suggested that the accepted paradigm of private ownership or property versus communal ownership or government property might not be the most honest or meaningful menu selection. Rather, it may be that the real choice is between property and no property, between ownership and no ownership. You recall that it was Karl Marx, the world-renowned theorist of modern socialism, who advocated the abolition of property in land as the first plank in his Communist Manifesto. Abolition sounds like no property to me. You know, the world abounds in ruthless treachery, with dissimulation and deceit being the cheapest and most common tools of political intrigue. More and more, the general public begins to see this as axiomatic. If his lips are in motion, the politician must be lying. As with all previous Datum Line broadcasts, today's message is part of a continuum that began over a year ago. Our current focus on dictatorial political economies, all being shades of socialism, follows our discourse on free enterprise capitalism, a system none of us have ever enjoyed. It was already on its deathbed when the FDR administration began to tamper with the economy in concert with the 20-year-old Federal Reserve system. Today's message will continue by adding briefly to the subject of property and ownership, along with a personal anecdote to illustrate how their understanding has been confused relative to your automobile and the Department of Motor Vehicles. We'll then pick up where we left off in our last message, I hope, regarding the reasons we've been given to justify creating the Federal Reserve System by an act of Congress. In fact, today marks the 99th anniversary of that tragic event when Congress passed and President Wilson signed the Federal Reserve Act on December 23rd, 1913. Today's message, Dictatorship of Debt, Part 12. Here's our first break. I'm Bruce G. McCarthy, and you are listening to Datum Line.
As many of you know, natural supplements are fantastic for your body and have zero side effects. You need to restore your body's natural balance. TerraVim strives to carry only the highest quality dietary supplements and natural vitamins that can be beneficial in helping your body recover from the impact of daily stress, allergens, illness, environmental pollution, and the aging process. Why buy from TerraVim? Simple. TerraVim provides a rewards program. Earn $1 for every $10 spent, free health consultations, free shipping on all orders, and an additional 10% discount on every order when you mention the coupon code RBN. Call 866-647-4372. That's 866-647-4372, or go to terravim.com. That's TerraVim.com. TerraVim, the best supplements on earth.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
A healthy heart starts with Extendovite. I've always believed that I had to have a strong defense to overcome the new superbugs of today. Extendivite, a 7-herb heart protection cocktail, not only helped me to overcome a massive heart attack, but it also has built up my natural immune defenses against colds and flus. Extendivite has so many benefits that we all should be taking Extendivite to build up our defenses for what superbugs might emerge yet. So start today, clean out the toxins, and be as healthy as you can be. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Welcome back to this segment of Datum Line. And if you're joining us for the first time, the title of today's message is Dictatorship of Debt, Part 12. You know, on the subject of ownership and property, which we reviewed briefly in our last message, we had been citing Webster's and Random House dictionaries for those definitions. Today I'm going to turn to Black's Law Dictionary, and I'll use my old fifth edition. And we'll look up the word owner and ownership, and I'm not going to read all of it because it's actually almost, it's over a page long probably, trying to define both of those words, but we'll take the meat of it anyway. So let's go to the word owner. According to Blacks, and they cite various cases usually, which have kind of decided what these words mean, the word owner means the person in whom is vested the ownership, dominion, or title of property. I'm emphasizing that for a reason. Proprietor. He who has dominion of a thing, real or personal, corporeal or incorporeal, that meaning tangible or intangible, which he has a right to enjoy and do with as he pleases, even to spoil or destroy it as far as the law permits, unless he be prevented by some agreement or covenant which restrains his right. You know, if you own the automobile and you decide you want to destroy it, you could probably do that, but you don't have the right to put a backpack nuclear device inside that automobile, blow it to smithereens, and send shrapnel all over the community because you don't have a right to destroy your property and at the same time destroy anybody else's in the process. Okay? So the general laws wouldn't allow you to do it that way. Now, we go down further to a further definition of this word, owner, says the person in whom the interests are vested has title to the interest, whether he holds them for his own benefit or for the benefit of another. Thus the term title, unless ownership, or rather unlike ownership, is a colorless word to say without more, that's an interesting way to put it, it sounds kind of British, doesn't it, that a person has title to certain property does not indicate whether he holds such property for his own benefit or as trustee. Okay, so title is a colorless word. Then they go on to an equitable owner. Well, what's that? One who is recognized in equity. Now, contracts for debt with a bank are contracts consummated in a body of jurisprudence called equity. So that's why I bring up this word equitable owner, because banks are equitable owners in all kinds of things out there. I don't think they're lawful owners because they don't lend anything. There's no money that's loaned to anybody. So it's kind of a fictitious equitable owner from my point of view, but you can take it as you wish. Anyway, equitable owner, one who is recognized in equity as the owner of property because the real and beneficial use and title belong to him, although the bare legal title is vested in another. Now, people might think that if they have legal ownership, that that's really something. No, bare legal ownership, it really isn't much of anything. We'll go on. There may, therefore, be two owners in respect to the same property. One, the nominal, in name only, or legal owner. The other, the beneficial or equitable owner. Sounds like the equitable owner is a little higher up the ladder, doesn't it? So let's go to legal owner, because that's what most people are when they have a certificate of title from the state. The state certificate of title identifies you, I think, as the legal owner. That's not very good. Quote, one who is recognized and held responsible by the law as the owner of property. Doesn't mean that you are, but you're held as though you are responsible for it anyway. In a more particular sense, one in whom the legal title to real estate is vested, but who holds it in trust for the benefit of another, the latter being called the equitable owner. Again, that would be the bank, I think. And we go down to ownership. Collection of rights to use and enjoy property, including right to transmit it to others. That makes sense. If you own it, you ought to be able to transmit it to somebody else if you'd like to. The complete dominion, title, or proprietary right in a thing or claim. Complete, not incomplete, okay? The right of one or more persons, oh, now we can share it, to possess and use a thing to the exclusion of others. That's, I guess I can understand that. You know, a husband and wife can jointly own something, and so long as they get along, there's no problem. But when they don't get along, joint ownership becomes a real problem, doesn't it? Because both of them own each one half of every blade of grass out in the front yard, in the backyard. And it gets difficult when you start sharing ownership that way. The right by which a thing belongs to someone in particular to the exclusion of all other persons. This brings us down to ownership, where you are the one who owns. Own has a very limited application when you break it down. The exclusive right of possession, enjoyment, and disposal, involving as an essential attribute the right to control, handle, and dispose. One more little paragraph, and bear with me. Ownership of property is either absolute or qualified. Now, that's important. It's one or the other. Do you own it all by yourself, or is your ownership qualified in that you share it with someone? The ownership of property is absolute when a single person has the absolute dominion over it and may use it or dispose of it according to his pleasure, subject only to general laws. Again, you don't put the backpack nuke device and blow up your car. The ownership is qualified when it is shared with one or more persons, when the time of enjoyment is deferred or limited, or when the use is restricted. Okay. That's own and ownership. Black's 5th edition. So qualified ownership is shared with two or more owners, but how is an exclusive right to possess and use a nation's means of production and distribution, as in a socialist, fascist, or communist system, how can that be divided here in the United States, 310 million different ways? And when we finally become one big happy communist globalist family, and the class struggle is finally over, How will 7 billion of us carry out the right to possess and use everything to the utter exclusion of everyone else? You see, I have difficulty accepting the socialist mantra of public ownership, which is probably why more than a dozen U.S. Marines surrounded us one day when a friend of mine and I strolled across a runway of a U.S. Naval Air Station about 50 years ago. You see, as a young high school student and part owner of that facility, I was fully aware that ours was a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. So it seemed only logical to me that the no trespassing sign that we saw when we jumped over the perimeter fence must have applied to Russian spies, but surely not to any of us co-owners of that public facility, you understand. This ownership study brings to mind another anecdote that might interest listeners, one which occurred only 27 years ago, back in 1985. It involved a new travel trailer that I had acquired from a dealer in another state 3 years earlier, back when I was living on the road as a public speaker. Since the RV was never registered during that three-year period, I retained the paramount title document called the Manufacturer's Statement of Origin, or MSO for short. I later decided to sell the trailer. I'm using the word sell as a street definition word, you understand, because actually I would probably be receiving credit instruments, which would mean that I was the buyer and not the seller. But that's another story. But I later decided to sell that travel trailer and get a motorhome also with the MSO. But the state official who wanted to buy my travel trailer, again using street definition, was petrified of the manufacturer's statement of origin. He insisted that I get what he called a state title so he could then buy my trailer, or perhaps so I could sell it. So what this meant was that in his eyes, and for the last 3 years, I didn't own that travel trailer. So it must have been stolen, right? Someone else must have owned it, even though I was the one who had the bill of sale marked paid in full, and I had the highest chain of title document, which was the manufacturer's statement of origin, the MSO, showing that there was no lien holder. How can you own anything more than that? So the question is, if I didn't own it, who did? I decided to visit the nearby DMV office, Department of Motor Vehicles, to see if they could help me solve this problem. Officials are there to help, right? Well, if you believe that, then I've got a beautiful suspension bridge over in San Francisco to sell you. And for those listeners who are unfamiliar with the MSO, it looks like a state certificate of title. I think it looks better, quite frankly. Has the requisite transfer of title wording on the reverse side so you can transfer a title to someone else, and is also the paramount document proving the complete chain of title from the manufacturer to the dealer to the next owner and the next owner and the next owner and so forth. Most people, however, have never seen this document because, one, most people in America don't own their automobiles, their motorhomes, or their travel trailers. The bank does. Secondly, their MSO was surrendered to the state DMV when all of that perplexing paperwork was gone over and signed down there at the dealership. You remember? One of those forms that you signed was a limited power of attorney, whereby you authorized the dealer to surrender your paramount title document, the MSO, to the state in exchange for a lesser document called the State Certificate of Title, which then identifies you as a mere legal owner. Here's our music. Here's our next break. I'm Bruce G. McCarthy, and you're listening to Bottom Line.
Would you like to reclaim lost health? Are supplements only getting you so far? Hey folks, my name is Franklin. I had a heart attack in 2006 that left me with a damaged valve, working at only 20% capacity and odds against being here now. Then I found RNA Drops, a patented complement formula that creates perfect cells in your body. My perfect cells helped me to regain heart function and more. What could your body do with perfect cells? For a limited time, you can find out for free. Go to franklinsrnadrops.com and get a free mini bottle, valued at $50 on its way. Just pay shipping and handling. While you're there, you can view our growing line of products and hear amazing stories of what these products have done for others. My story is there as well. That's franklinsrnadrops.com. Start reclaiming your health today by giving your body what it needs. I cannot wait to hear what your perfect cells are doing for you. Thank you.
Introducing Michael Anthony's Private Stock Herbal Formulas, infection killer for all infections, viral, bacterial, fungal, parasitic. My Rapid Heal for all injuries enables the body to mend super fast. My System Toner, the Rejuvenator, tune-up for the entire body, head to toe, keeping it youthful, the mind positive and focused. Dragon Juice, the Revitalizer, pure power in a delicious drink. If your body's dragging, you need Dragon Juice. Lung formula for asthma and all lung afflictions, arthritis fix, great tasting herbal teas and more. Michael Anthony's Private Stock exclusive herbal formulas. To find out more, call 845-231-1094 or email Michael Anthony's Private Stock at yahoo.com. Michael Anthony's Private Stock exclusive herbal formulas.
Golden Stag Safaris invites you to hunt in one of Argentina's most beautiful scenarios. Enjoy the quietness of the Pampas and the five-star accommodation lodge. Excellent food and wine included in your stay. All the while hunting big game in the Argentine Valley. An area known for having a wide range of game, excellent trophies, the biggest stags in South America, as well as many other species. All gold medal quality. One-on-one guided hunts, rental guns available with the highest quality scopes in every caliber, Land Rovers for transport, pickup at Buenos Aires Airport, and a private aircraft for charter is all available. Go to www.goldenstagsafaris.com to see photos and for more information. Again, www.goldenstagsafaris.com.
Welcome back to this segment of Datum Line, and on the other side of this break, I brought up the subject of what you might call a document swap. When you get a new automobile, what do you do when you get a new automobile? Well, at the dealership, you sign all kinds of things. It's called a dealer five-pack, and one of the things you sign is a limited power of attorney, whether you realize it or not, whereby you surrender the paramount title document, if you will, the deed to the ranch, to the state, and get from the state a document that is lesser in character and quality. It's called a certificate of title. Looks a lot like the MSO, but it's not as powerful as the MSO because the MSO is the source of the state document. The state document is not the source of the MSO. Anyway, when you do that and you get a state certificate of title, you're identified as the mere legal owner. We've already described what that was, who evidently holds the object in trust for someone else. Usually that's a bank to start with. And it may actually include the state, which picks up an ownership interest in your automobile, your motorhome, or your travel trailer. Of course, we understood all this, right? That's why no one had to force us or to compel us to do this. Nobody had to hold a gun to our head. It was purely voluntary, and therefore it is binding as contractual. How do we get into this mess? Well, it conjures up a verse of scripture in my mind. And it has to do with a certain profession, the only profession that the Lord Jesus Christ actually took umbrage with, and that was the lawyers. Woe unto ye lawyers, ye hypocrites! Ye heap burdens upon the people grievous to be borne, and you lift not one finger to remove them. Luke 11, verse 46. Anyway, with this as a little bit of background, here's how my visit to DMV played out. I first asked the lady behind the counter for an application form for a state certificate of title, thinking that it might possibly reveal something of interest, and it most certainly did. On the first line, I noticed that it said, it says title type. So it says original, duplicate, non-negotiable, repossessed, corrected, mechanics lien, salvage, duplicate salvage. So I asked her, I said, well, what kind of title do you issue down here? She says, well, these kind right here. And she started reading them off for me like I didn't know how to read. I said, no, I said, I don't think you understand me. I said, what kind of a title do you issue in the original? Do you issue a color of title, a legal title, indicia of title, monuments of title, non-merchantable title, a merchantable title, an onerous title? Do you issue paramount titles? What kind of titles do you issue down here? See, those are the kind that are listed in Black's Law Dictionary. Black's didn't list any of these others that they had on their form, not one of them. She says, I don't know. Oh. Well, I said, I got a question on line two. It says owner's name, last, first, and middle. Is that where I put my name? She says, yes, you put your name there. I said, well, if I put my name there, I'm identifying myself as the owner. She says, yes. I said, but according to the definition, and I had a Black's Law Dictionary under my arm, so I opened it up and put it on the counter. I said, owner. Owner is a person who has title. I said, if I already have title, why would I come down here and apply for a certificate of title, the likes of which you can't even define, whereby I, as an applicant, would create the administrative nexus between me and thee? She says, you don't own that trailer. I said, excuse me? I said, I've had this thing for 3 years. Well, she says, you own it, but you can't do anything with it. I said, I've been doing something with it for 3 years. At which point, I believe it must have been her supervisor stepped in, and she says, excuse me, sir. Yes. There's a period of time in there, she said, where no one owns that trailer. Would you put that in writing for me? No, I won't. I didn't think you would. Whereupon, that lady exited the room. Back to my first lady. I said, now, you've given me some interesting choices here. I own it. I don't own it. And nobody owns it. There's only one choice left that you haven't given as an option, and that is everybody owns it. Well, things weren't going well for this lady, and she kind of lost her temper, wrote down a telephone number, and demanded that I call that number. I said, well, who's that? She says, that's the state. I said, Mr. or Mrs.? Well, the correspondence, if you'd like to see how that played out, is probably found on the Internet. People tell me it's there. I don't have a website, but you can look up MSO, Key to Ownership, or you can look up my name, and you'll eventually find it on the Internet, on the web, and you can read how that correspondence went. Read it for entertainment, if for no other reason. Anyway, can a certificate of title, which the state issues, be the title for which it is a mere certificate? No. See, this is analogous to my often asked question about money. Can a unit of the money become the money for which it is the mere unit? Of course not. So a piece of paper is not a title, but we have a habit of abbreviating all of our communication, and that's kind of too bad. But I would like to tell you what a paramount title is, at least according to Black's Law Dictionary, because that's the most important one. Paramount title, in the law of real property, properly, one which is superior to the title with which it is compared, in the sense that the former, the paramount title, is the source or origin of the latter. The MSO is the paramount title document and is the source of the latter, which is the state certificate of title. They didn't tell us that, did they? No. It's kind of a world of make-believe that we live in, and we just kind of go through the motions. Do we understand what we're doing? No, but that's not important. And who got us into this mess? Well, I think the legal profession helped. And I think that's why the Lord didn't speak too highly of the lawyers of his day. They were called Pharisees. They're still with us, by the way. That's another subject. Anyway, we'll continue on with this subject. You know, well-meaning and some not-so-well-meaning saviors of the environment delight in public government ownership of immense land areas to prevent its unsustainable and rapacious exploitation by insensitive and sometimes heavy-handed developers. Their feelings are understandable, of course, but what makes development rapacious and unsustainable? We'll answer that question on the other side of this break.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
An effective 100% organic nutritional supplement is now available to be shipped out to you, rush delivery. Heart and Body Extract is a 100% natural organic and wild-crafted formula made out of garlic, hawthorn berries, hawthorn leaves, coleus, motherwort, bilberry, butcher's broom kelp, mistletoe, ginger, and cayenne pepper. It is an excellent formula designed to balance and support the heart and circulatory system. It is extremely effective and starts to work within days. Order your 2-month supply by visiting heartandbody.com or by calling 866-295-5305. 866-295-5305. Take the high road to a long and happy life. HeartandBody.com.
Are you facing foreclosure? Worried about late payments? Fight back and stay in your home. Zero Debt Guaranteed can help. We'll send you a free ebook just for calling 800-477-9256 or go to ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. Get the details on how to remove your risk to your debt. And so important to many homeowners today, how to stop foreclosure.
Forget loan modification.
The Zero Debt in 90 Days system can show you how to get the bank to pay your property taxes and insurance while stopping your foreclosure.
Without paying one dime.
You can take control. Stop foreclosure. Protect your cash, assets, wages, property, and sleep peacefully at night.
Welcome back to this half of Adam Line, Dictatorship of Debt, Part 12. On the other side of the break, I had asked the question, what makes development rapacious and unsustainable? You know, the development of our natural resources. Well, the answer to that question, I think, is what also stimulates developer insensitivity and heavy-handedness. That is, the incredible power of bank credit, wielded by mega corporations whose board of directors are well insulated from their impact upon the defenseless little guy and our endangered wildlife, neither of which have a strong voice in the courtroom or the likely prospect of obtaining judicial relief. Why? Well, first off, you're dealing with corporations. What are those? Corporation is an artificial person by definition. What's an artificial person? Well, it's an intangible person, one that you cannot see, smell, hear, taste, and or touch. That's what it is. It's pretty hard to fight those. They're a legal framework, if you will, created by the state. See, they're creatures of the state. And they're clothed with limited liability. And the word liability in law means responsibility, which means that corporations are not as responsible as you are expected to be. And that's also putting you at a disadvantage. So a corporation, then, must be a legal fiction. What is a legal fiction? Or a fiction of law, one and the same. A fiction of law, according to Black's Law Dictionary, relying upon Ryan versus Motor Credit Company, is, quote, an assumption or supposition of law that something which is or may be false is true, or that a state of facts exists which has never really taken place. An assumption for purposes of justice of a fact that does not or may not exist. A rule of law which assumes as true and will not allow to be disproved something which is false, but not impossible. It's quite a system we've got. Woe unto you lawyers, hypocrites. You heap burdens upon the people, grievous to be borne, and you lift not one finger to remove them. You know, back in the days of public speaking and much travel, I remember seeing BLM, Department of Interior signs, you know, Bureau of Land Management, and the signs would say something like, land of many uses. And I remember hearing my own response when I would read aloud that sign, and I would say in return, yes, but you can never live here. There are, nevertheless, some favored corporations which do harvest some of those protected resources from that land of many uses. Of late, we're told about corporate exploitation of natural gas from public land, which has beneath it deep underground shale deposits. Okay? Sounds like shades of Comrade Levy's seventh plank. No, I should have said Comrade Marx, which says extension of factories and instruments of production owned by the state, the bringing into cultivation of wastelands in accordance with a common plan. Well, central planning, not local planning, is part of that common plan, and it relates to fracking, as they call it, in that the local control was taken away, at least here in Ohio, they say it was, by someone with a bigger club. So you don't go to your town hall to see if you can get any administrative relief from what's going on. They'll tell you that they don't have local control anymore. And people say that the state took that local control away, but they don't seem to know how the state got the authority to take that control away. But you see, the state here desperately depends upon federal funds. Federal grants. So I think control likely resides much further away than our own state capital or your state capital. What do you think? And remember, as for corporations, they're creatures of the state, having been created by the state. And some pretty big corporations like Chrysler and General Motors have received generous bailouts from the federal state. So state ownership of all means of production and distribution is not so far away, although I don't know how I can become part owner. I can see where we have a bureaucracy that might claim to be owner. And who better to run the state cartels than the Council on Foreign Relations, Bilderberg, and Trilateral Commission club members who have been designing the Communist Socialist Fascist Monopoly Board? And who better to fund their immense empire-building campaign than those special club members at the very top of the pyramid who wield magic pens with which to create bank credit. Environmentalists are understandably upset by the rapid exploitation of natural gas from subterranean shale deposits, some of it garnered from protected land, just as timber was recently harvested from parkland next to our land here 2 years ago. That same park management, however, took great offense when a nearby couple cut down a tree thought to be on their own side of the line. A few days later, the wife opened her bedroom door and was met point blank by a rifle barrel and a federal agent on the other end. Half a dozen agents had arrived early that morning to let themselves into all of their outbuildings and her house. Maybe we don't really own our home here in the USSA, huh, comrade? The environmental movement was commandeered by the financial elite to serve as a clever facade, while their megacorporations carve up the globe for private gain. Here in Ohio, for example, a $40 billion artificial carrot credit was dangled before a starry-eyed public and their officials by the shale gas lobby. To put this ordinary-sounding dollar figure into perspective, it's equal to a $40,000 spending spree every day for 1 million days. And how long is 1 million days? Well, it's about 2,740 years. So, starting at the birth of Christ, we could spend $40,000 a day all the way up until today, with almost 730 more years beyond today's date to shop until you drop. That's a lot of incentive for officials and the public to overlook potential hazards associated with fracking. And where will those $40 billion come from? Well, like every other dollar, from the godmen of banking. So at the crux of every social political conflict facing us sits the reigning priesthood of a mystery religion that supplies all the necessary incentive, that being credit, to influence and shape the man-made world we see unfolding around us. And why do I call it a mystery religion? Because banking to most people is a mystery, and it is definitely a religion, because it deals in nothing but credit, and credit is the secular word which equates with faith. Credit comes from the Latin word credere, which means to believe. Okay? So if you're upset about fracking, or perhaps more wars in the Middle East, or maybe it's geo-atmospheric engineering like chemtrails and HAARP, or perhaps it's the spread of GMO fictional foods, or the United Nations Agenda 21, or perhaps you're concerned about FEMA concentration camps, or the growth of government and its surveillance, or how our military is being turned against American citizens on behalf of the super rich. Or perhaps you're concerned about the transfer of U.S. public lands, redesignated quietly as international biospheres, or maybe the export of U.S. industry to Mexico, China, and beyond, with foreign factories being built here to replace them. If these and other newsworthy events concern you, then please do not ignore the means by which they've all come to pass. Bank credit. It's my belief, for those who are interested in what I believe, that if we had stood firm against the sins of banking and bank credit while holding on to our monetary system of gold, silver, and copper, pursuant to state and federal constitutions and scripture, the world would not be in the predicament we now see it. In our previous datum line message, we also began to explore the reasons used to justify creating the Federal Reserve System by Act of Congress on December 23rd, 1913, exactly 99 years ago. As I mentioned earlier. So, passage of the Federal Reserve Act, said a bank advocate of that day, was what they called, quote, a fine Christmas present. A phrase that was then picked up by media. So let's again review a Federal Reserve booklet by that title, where the author first introduces his readers to the problem of financial turmoil at the turn of the 20th century, which was used to justify the many proposals for monetary reform listed on the next page of his book, with emphasis on the documents which were carried to President Wilson by Congressman Carter Glass of Virginia, and Parker Willis, who represented the New York Journal of Commerce, 1 year before, on December 26, 1912. Despite the conflicting holiday that would leave federal offices empty, this was one conference that President Wilson did not cancel. So we turn to a Christmas present for the president, written by Gerald T. Dunn, who was former general counsel for the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis. And in his foreword, he said, quote, the idea of the Federal Reserve System was born of the financial turmoil plaguing the nation at the turn of the century. We then turn the page to what is now called page one. And he says that these documents that were brought to the president by Mr. Willis and Carter Glass, these documents concern plans for monetary reform. And he went on to say that for almost 50 years, discussions and proposals on the subject had come and gone, that there had been the Jones Commission of 1876, the Indianapolis Currency Convention of 1897, the National Monetary Commission of 1908, the Columbia University Conference of 1910, the Pujo Committee of 1912. There was the Muhlman Plan, the Baltimore Plan, the Morawitz Plan, the Warburg Plan. Now, you know that name. That's Paul Moritz Warburg, right? The Warburg Plan, the Walker Bill, several Fowler Bills, the Williams Bill, the Aldrich Bill, the Vreeland Bill, the Aldrich-Vreeland Bill. And then he tells you who some of the people were or the entities or organizations which brought those bills forward because they were so concerned about solving our problems, you understand. One was the American Bankers Association, which had its currency commission. And then there was the New York Merchants Association, its special currency committee. Then he says there was the National Citizens League for a sound banking system. Oh, they sound so good. Okay. Now, it says that the plan that was brought by Wilson's visitors, being Glass and Willis, envisaged a series of incorporated clearinghouse cooperatives that would hold part of the cash reserves of their member institutions and issue a special banknote currency against gold and prime bank paper. Well, what is prime bank paper? Well, those are IOUs. Now, that's incredible. Can you imagine issuing a note, which is a piece of paper, a promise to pay money, and you're going to back it with what? Well, with gold, some gold, and then you're going to back it with some paper. It's sort of like writing a check against a bad check, right? Oh, my last check bounced? Well, let me write you a new one. Turning to the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, their publication called I Bet You Thought, page 29, this is the second edition, 1980, they say in part, quote, when the Federal Reserve was established, Congress required the 12 Reserve Banks to back their currency, those notes, you see, with 40% gold and 100% eligible paper, which were short-term IOUs of businesses and farmers. The eligible paper requirement was reduced to 60% in 1917. End quote. You do that and your check bounces. You better have the full amount of funds. And, of course, I realize that the funds today are nothing more than numbers, raw numbers. But when you're going to issue a promise to pay money, then you've got to have 100% of the money behind the promise to pay it. And the Federal Reserve began its operations without that 100% reserve. Okay? And they go on to say that the cooperatives were proposed because the government lacked a central bank, either in form or functions, to manage its monetary apparatus. Such had not always been the case, however. Indeed, the first, and particularly the second, Bank of the United States had been pioneers in central banking techniques. All this, however, ended when Andrew Jackson, see, he's the bad guy, on July 10th, 1832, issued his thunderbolt veto against the second bank. Quote, unauthorized by the Constitution, subversive to the rights of the state, and dangerous to the liberties of the people, end quote. And that shaped national attitudes as to guarantee that a central bank in European form would never again take root in American soil. Well, that's not quite so, because we do have a central bank in European form on American soil, and it's called the Federal Reserve. So this bank, which was created, called the Federal Reserve, was created, why? Because there was financial turmoil in the 1800s and at the turn of the century. What is financial? Okay. Well, we'll look up the word finance and the word financial here if we've got the time. Finance, as a verb, to supply with funds, oh, that's an interesting word, through the issuance of stocks, bonds, notes, or mortgages to provide with capital or loan money. What's loan money? Well, they can't tell you what loan money is, because if you ask them to define money, they can't define it. We've already been down that road, haven't we? What's a financial institution? It means any organization authorized to do business under state or federal laws relating to financial institutions, including, without limitation, banks and trust companies, savings banks, building and loan associations, savings and loan companies, or associations and credit unions. What does the word finance and financial have to do with? Money? Lawful money? Oh, no. No, it has to do with credit, bank credit. Financial matters do not relate to lawful money, which was precisely defined by statute at Title 12, United States Code, Section 152. The terms lawful money or lawful money of the United States shall be construed to mean gold or silver coin of the United States. That's pretty easy to define, isn't it? That's pretty darn definitive. Finance relates to fictitious money, the identification of which is a mystery, and to those who manufacture it out of nothing. And all of the commissions created to study a financial problem set about to reform our constitutional monetary system and would do so by circumventing the lawful amendment process. This is what Norman Dodd of the Carol Reese Committee to Investigate Tax-Exempt Foundations in 1953 would have called an un-American activity, and rightly so. Here's our music. This is our next break. I'm Bruce G. McCarthy, and you're listening to Datum Line.
$4, $5, $6, even $7 a gallon? According to fuel industry insiders and economic experts, those are the forecasted fuel prices, with no end in sight. Fight back fuel prices with a fuel saver from airfusionsystems.com. These fuel savers can save you from 20 to 40%. They're designed to fit any vehicle, from compacts to SUVs to transport trucks. The fuel saver works on all gas, diesel, even propane engines. Easy do-it-yourself installation in about 15 minutes. And the best part? No engine modifications, no computer chipping, no running wires, no chemicals, no water, no running costs, and no maintenance. And these fuel savers come complete with all parts and accessories. See how it works at airfusionsystems.com, spelled A-I-R-F-U-S-I-O-N, systems.com. Or call 888-887-9981, 888-887-9981. Fuel savers from airfusionsystems.com. Save fuel, save money, save Earth.
Hey there, my name is Frank Bates. What I'm about to tell you in the next 60 seconds could get me in a lot of trouble. I just created a free video presentation at 123crooks.com that exposes the electricity monopolies and government agencies for what they really are: incompetent, lying crooks that are counting on your ignorance and fear to keep your power bills criminally high. Some have called this a conspiracy. Others have called it a cover-up, and you'll be shocked to find out how deep the conspiracy goes. My video at 123crooks.com exposes the truth and shows you the secret of how I beat them and how you can beat them too. Watch the controversial video that thousands of other smart patriots have already seen in the last 3 months. Go to 123crooks.com and discover one weird trick to slash your power bill and protect your home. Go watch my video now at 123crooks.com before they force me to shut it down. 123crooks.com.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Well, welcome back to the final segment of Datum Line. I had mentioned the word fund on the other side of this break, so I guess I'll hit that very briefly. The word fund is a generic term, and all-embracing, says Black's Law Dictionary, as compared with the term money, which apparently is not all-embracing, because they say that that's specific. Okay, so in the plural, this word, like funds, this word has a variety of slightly different meanings as follows: monies and much more, such as notes, bills, checks, drafts, stocks, and bonds. And a broader meaning may include property of every kind, and so forth, okay? But again, they can't define money. So what we're dealing with in the subject of finance, financial institutions and funding, we're dealing with credit. Okay? So, our problem, said the bankers and their friends, was not the credit. The problem was lawful money, gold in particular, which they would dutifully excise from the economy like a doctor removing strategic body parts so that they can never become cancerous. Isn't that ingenious? One of those proposals, you may remember, was offered by Secretary of the Treasury, William G. McAdoo. And on page 10 of Gerald Dunn's book, A Christmas Present for the President, it says that the McAdoo plan envisioned a treasury bank, a massive issue of treasury notes. Oh, boy, all you populists out there would love that. And a sequestration of gold. Remember we looked up that word, sequestration, or to sequester? The definition that's appropriate to our subject is the legal seizure of property for security. Confiscation of property as by court or government action. So said Webster's New World Dictionary of 1966. How insightful of Mr. McAdoo. The problem as he saw it had nothing to do with bankers issuing unlawful IOUs for gold they didn't have. Oh, perish the thought. Gold was the problem. And by surgically removing all of that barbaric metal from our economy, we would never again need to fear another financial crisis. That was the very least a civic-minded central bank could do for the innocent, toiling masses of society. And while the McAdoo plan was rejected, Federal Reserve system created by a modified Carter-Glass bill engineered the confiscation of our monetary gold in 1934, only 20 years after the Federal Reserve was created. That's quite an accomplishment. Well, do you suppose Capitol Hill could eliminate the threat of food shortages and famines by simply confiscating all of our oats, wheat, and corn? Then, by creating a commodity reserve board, the experts in Washington could regulate, insure, and guarantee the value and stability of elastic oat, wheat, and corn IOUs, or futures, that no longer promise to pay oats, wheat, and corn. How so? Because nobody would bother to grow them. But if you had to choose between a bowl of wheat flakes and a crock of wheat futures, which would it be, comrade? That's the system that we have. You see, Americans began long ago, trusting in a world of make-believe. Artificial money, credit. Artificial persons, like corporations. And we're the people who put more faith, and did in the old days, in banknotes, than the gold and silver they promised to pay. Where a diploma is now more important than the education it claims to represent. Where a certificate of title is far more important than the paramount title document or absolute ownership. Well, this is the end of this broadcast. I hope it has been of interest to you. And I thank you very much for listening. I consider it a privilege to be able to speak with you. I'm Bruce G. McCarthy, saying so long, and have a good day.
Financial